10:48 p.m. When Tucker and Bukalov rejoined the others, Anya was awake. Christopher guarded her with his AR-15 rifle, while Kane kept close watch. Tucker ignored her and followed Bukalov to his makeshift office, set up amid their stack of supplies. From the haphazard scatter of paper, notes, and journal pages, he had been busy. "It's here," Bukalov said, and grabbed de Klerk's old diary from atop one of the boxes. With the skill of a magician cutting a deck of cards, the doctor opened to the spot where it looked like pages had been cut out. He compared it to the pages Tucker had discovered. "Looks like a perfect match," Bukalov said. Anya stirred, trying to see, to stand, but a deep-throated growl from Kane dropped her back to her butt. "See? Here's a crude, early rendition of Luca in the old diary, a hazy sketch, a first-draft effort, what we had to work from before." Bukalov fitted a sheet from Tucker's collection into place. "This page was the diary's next page, before it was cut out, the finished masterpiece." The page in question depicted a deftly drawn sketch of a mushroom-like stalk with ruffled edges sprouting from a bulb. Colors of each structure were called out in tiny, precise print. Other drawings showed the same plant in various stages of growth. Bukalov pointed to the earliest of the drawings. "This is Luca in a dormant stage, a bulb-like structure. De Klerk describes it here as a butter-yellow color. His measurements indicate it's about the size of a golf ball. But don't let its simplicity fool you. This structure is pure potential. Each cell in the bulb is a blank slate, a vicious chimera, waiting to unleash its fury on the modern world. It reproduces by infection and replication, as invasive as they come, an apex predator of the flora world. But if we could tame it, unlock the keys to its unique primordial genetics, anything could be possible."
"But first, we need to find it," Tucker said.
Bukalov turned to him, a confused expression on his face.
"I already explained where to find it."
"When?"
"Just a moment ago, when I said, it's here."
Tucker had thought the doctor was referring to de Klerk's diary.
"What do you mean, it's here?"
"Or it should be."
Bukalov stared around the cavern with frustration.
"It's supposed to be here, in this cavern, at least according to de Klerk."
"Why do you think that?"
Bukalov flipped the diary to the page before with the crude drawing of Luca.
"Here he talks about finding the dormant bulbs, but he never says where to find them. He's a sly one. But see here, in the margin of that section."
Tucker leaned over. He couldn't read the passage written in Afrikaans, but next to it was a crudely scribbled spiral.
"I always thought it was just an idle doodle," Bukalov said. "I do it all the time, especially when I'm concentrating. My mind wanders, then so does my pen."
"But you think it's significant now?"
"The drawing looks like water spilling down a bathtub drain."
Bukalov pointed to the torrent of water across the room.
"It wasn't a mindless squiggle. De Klerk was symbolically marking this passage about the discovery of the bulb with its location. As I said, it's here, under the bathtub drain."
Bukalov closed the journal and tossed it aside.
"I just have to find it, and now that I don't have to play babysitter..."
With a glare toward Anya, Bukalov picked up an LED lantern and set off across the cavern.
For the moment, Tucker left the doctor to his search.
Knowing now that Harzin's team was in the neighborhood, he had to prepare for the contingency that Bukalov might fail. His ruse with the booby-trapped rover would not stop the enemy for long, nor did he know how many of the enemy his trick might take out. He pictured his last glimpse of Felice Nilsson, leaning out the helicopter door, her lower face hidden by a scarf,
her blonde hair whipping in the wind. It was too much to hope that she would be caught in that blast. He had to be ready. He crossed to the pile of boxes and packs, knelt down, and pulled over the stiff cardboard box holding the blocks of C4. "Christopher, can you start measuring out 6-foot lengths of detonation cord? I'll need about 15 of them." Anya stared at them, her face unreadable. Ignoring her, he calculated the best spots to set his charges to cause the most destruction. If Bukalov couldn't find the bulbs of Luka, he intended to make sure no one ever did, especially General Harzin. He unfolded the flaps of the box of C4 and stared inside. With a sinking drop of his stomach, he glanced again over to Anya. Her expression had changed only very slightly, the tiniest ghost of a smile. "How?" he asked. The box before him was packed full of dirt, about the same weight as C4. Anya shrugged.
"Back at the campsite this morning, after you left, all your C4 is buried out there."
Of course. She had known of his contingency plan to blow the cave as a failsafe and had taken steps to ensure it wouldn't happen. But she was wrong about one fact. All your C4. He had taken a block of the explosive with him as he hunted for gorillas and ran into the pack of dogs. Later, he used half of it to rig the rover. He still had the other half, but it was far too little to do any real damage here. And now they were running out of time. If they couldn't blow the place up, that left only one path open to them. Find the source of Luka before Harzin's team returned. So there was still hope. Not great, but something. Bukalov dashed it a moment later as he returned with more bad news.
"I found nothing."
11:12 p.m. Fueled by anger and frustration, Tucker tossed the leg of an old broken chair across the cavern floor. It bounced and skittered away, splashing through a standing pool of water. Christopher and Bukalov worked elsewhere in the cavern, spread out, slowly circling the torrent of water falling through the room's center. Tucker wasn't satisfied with Bukalov's cursory search. He had them sifting through some of the old board detritus and flotsam tossed against the walls by prior flooding. But it was eating up time and getting them nowhere. If they had a sample of Luka, Kane could have quickly sniffed out the dark garden hidden here, but they didn't. So he left the shepherd guarding Anya. Christopher and Bukalov finally reached him. They'd made a complete loop of the cavern. He read the lack of success in their defeated expressions.
"Maybe I was wrong about the bathtub drain."
Bukalov stared up at the water cascading through the vortex.
"Maybe it was just a doodle."
Tucker suddenly stiffened next to him.
"We've been so stupid."
Christopher turned.
"What?"
Tucker grabbed Bukalov by the shoulder.
"The clerk was marking the location. It is a drain."
The doctor looked up again toward the ceiling.
"No."
Tucker pointed to the floor, to where the flood of water flowing down from above either pooled or drained through fissures in the floor.
"That's the drain depicted by de Klerk. The water must be going somewhere."
Bukalov's eyes went wide.
"There's more cavern below us."
Christopher stared across the cavern.
"One problem. If you're right, how do we get down there?"
Tucker stared across the expanse of the room. "De Klerk has been cagey all along. He wouldn't have left the entrance open. He would have sealed or covered it somehow." Tucker circled his arm in the air.
"One more time around. We need to find that opening."
It was accomplished quickly, now that they knew what to look for. Christopher called him over.
"See here!"
Tucker and Bukalov joined him beside a thigh-high boulder not far from the torrent. Excess water sluiced through a 4-inch crack under it and vanished away.
"I believe the stone is covering a larger hole,"
Christopher said. "I think you're right." With both Christopher and Tucker putting their shoulders to it, they were able to dislodge and roll the boulder aside. The hole was small, only 2 feet wide. All three of them leaned over the opening, shining their lights down into the depths. A cavern opened below, its floor about 7 feet below them. Tucker squinted, noting the protrusions sticking up from the floor. For a few moments, he thought he was staring at a cluster of stalagmites, but they were too uniform, and the beam of his headlamp glinted off a hint of brass beneath a greenish patina.
"What the hell are those?"
Bukalov said.
"Those are artillery shells."
Chapter 39. March 21st, 11:34 p.m. Groot Karas Mountains, Namibia. Tucker lowered himself to his belly and hung his head through the opening. He panned his lamp around the space. The spread of upright shells looked like some giant's bed of nails. Turning, he faced the others.
"There's at least 2 dozen shells down there."
"What type of artillery are they?"
Christopher asked.
"Can't be sure. Judging by the size, I'd guess 12-pounders. British Royal Horse Artillery units used them in their cannons during the wars."
"Are they alive?" said Bukalov.
"More than likely."
"Why are they here?"
Christopher pressed. Tucker considered it a moment.
"I'm guessing because of the black powder inside them. The Boers were probably using the powder in the shells to reload bullets."
"The Boers had to be resourceful to survive," Bukalov commented.
"So do we."
Tucker shifted around, swinging his legs toward the hole.
Somewhere down below must be de Klerk's dark garden.
"Doc, tell me again what to look for. Anything I should be watching for?"
Bukalov shook his head.
"I don't have the time to give you a crash course in botany. Nor have you read all of de Klerk's notes. I should go with you. Besides, why should you have all the fun?"
Christopher looked unconvinced.
"Dr. Bukalov, perhaps you didn't hear Mr. Tucker correctly. Those shells are live and likely very unstable by now."
"I heard him, but how difficult can it be? I must simply avoid bumping into one of those things, correct?"
"That about covers it," Tucker said. "But it's tight down there. You'll have to crawl. It's going to be hard work."
"And I'm saving my stamina for what?" Bukalov asked. "I can do this. I have not come all this way to find Luca only to blow myself up. God will guide my hand."
"I didn't know you believed in God."
"It's a recent development, considering everything you've put me through."
"All right, Doc. Let's do this."
"I'll need to gather a few things first. Tools, sample dishes, collection bags."
"Go get them."
As Bukalov hurried away, Tucker returned his attention to the array of shells down below. He told Christopher,
"There's at least a couple of 100 pounds of black powder down there. It might just solve our explosives problem."
"Will it be enough to collapse this cavern system?"
"No, but it'll definitely take out this immediate set of caves."
Bukalov returned quickly, with everything collected into a brown leather kit with his initials on it. He eyed the hole.
"Gentlemen, I believe I could use some assistance getting down. It's not a far drop, but now is not the time for a misstep."
Tucker agreed. He went first, using his arms to slowly lower himself, keeping well away from the first row of shells. Once down, he turned and helped ease Bukalov through the opening. Christopher held his arms while Tucker guided his legs, planting the doctor's boot on firm footing.
"That should do, gentlemen."
Bukalov ducked low, equipped now with his own headlamp.
"Shall we proceed?"
Tucker crouched next to him. From here, there was only about 4 feet of clearance between the floor and the roof. The chamber extended in a gentle downward slope. The water, streaming down from above, trickled in small rivulets across the floor, carving the soft sandstone into tiny channels like the scribblings of a mad god.
The rows of shells were standing upright in the flatter and drier sections.
"We should follow the water,"
Bukalov said, pointing down the slope.
"It's what we've been doing since we got here."
"I'll go first."
Dropping low, Tucker set the best course through the field of shells. He followed the trickles, wondering if he'd ever be dry again. The last pass through the deadly gauntlet required him to lie on his right hip and scoot through sideways. An inopportune thrust of an elbow set one tall brass round to rocking on its base. He was afraid even to touch it to stabilize it. Both men held their breath, but the shell steadied and went still. Tucker helped Bukalov past the squeeze.
"I can do it," the doctor complained. "I may have gray hair, but I'm not an invalid."
Free of the artillery, they were able to slide next to each other and crawl onward. Slowly, a soft light glowed out of the darkness ahead.
"Do you see that?" Bukalov asked. "Or are my eyes tired?"
Tucker shaded his headlamp with his hand. Bukalov followed his example. As the darkness ahead grew blacker, the glow brightened before their eyes. Definitely something over there. As Tucker set out again, the roof slowly dropped down on top of them, forcing them to their bellies. They slid alongside each other across the wet, sandy floor. Finally, the slope dumped them into a pool of water about a foot deep. It lay inside a domed chamber about the size of a compact car's cabin, with enough room to kneel up, but little more.
"Amazing," Bukalov said, craning his neck to stare around.
The arched roof glowed with a soft, silvery azure, like moonlight, but there were no cracks in the roof. The light suffused from a frilly carpet of glowing moss.
"It's lichen," Bukalov said.
"Okay, lichen.
Some phosphorescent species. And look, across the chamber."
The pond they knelt in was shaped like a crescent moon, its horns hugging a small peninsula of sandstone jutting out into the water from the far wall. Atop the surface, a dense field of buttery white growths sprouted about 6 inches tall. From bulbous bases, stalks formed thick, flat-topped umbrellas with fine filaments draping from them. They gave off a slightly sulfurous smell that hung in the still air.
"Luca," Bukalov murmured. "Odd."
As they shifted closer, Tucker felt the cracks in the floor under his knees, sucking at the cloth of his pants, marking drainage angles for this pool. The smell also grew worse.
"Is it okay to be breathing this?" Tucker said.
"I believe so."
Tucker wanted to believe so, too.
"They're exactly like the sketches from the diary," Bukalov said.
He had to admit, the renderings by de Klerk showed a masterful hand. The doctor splashed farther to the left.
"Come see this. Look at where the field of bulbs and growths meet the wall."
Tucker leaned to look where he pointed. The bulbs and the edges of the mushrooms that touched the wall were a brownish black, as if burned by the glow of the lichen covering the wall.
"I think the lichen is producing something toxic to the Luca."
Bukalov swung toward Tucker.
"Here might be the secret of the kill switch."
Tucker felt a surge that was equal parts relief and worry. Bukalov continued.
"It's what I had hoped to find here. Something had to be holding this organism in check down here. It couldn't just be the isolation of the environment."
"Then collect samples of everything and..."
Bukalov knelt back and brushed his fingertips across the roof, causing the glow to darken where he touched.
"You don't understand. We are looking at a microcosm of the ancient world, a pocket of the primordial history. I have so many questions."
"And we'll try to answer them later."
Tucker grabbed Bukalov by the elbow and pointed from the collection kit over the man's shoulder to the field of growth. Get your samples while you still can. A sharp bark echoed to them, followed by a second. Kane. Get to work, Doc, he ordered. I'm going to find out what's going on. Hurrying, he slid and crawled his way through the field of artillery shells and back to the waterfall chamber. He hauled himself out of the hole, and Christopher helped him to his feet.
He just started barking, Christopher said.
In the pool of light cast by the single LED lamp, it appeared Anya hadn't moved. She was still tied securely. Kane stood next to her, but he was staring toward the twin shotgun tunnels.
What is it? Christopher asked.
I don't know. Kane must have heard something. Tucker remembered his earlier sighting of the Russian soldiers. Anya called over to them.
It seems we owe you some thanks, Captain Wayne. We wouldn't have thought of this method without you. Upon your example in Russia, we decided to add another weapon to our arsenal.
She was staring at Kane. Tucker suddenly understood her veiled implication. Damn it, Anya, you are good. The thought had never occurred to him. Barring technology, what was the best way to track someone? Kane glanced back at him, clearly waiting for the order to pursue whatever he had sensed. Tucker turned to Christopher. Stay here, and be ready to help Bukalov.
Is there trouble?
Isn't there always? He pointed to Anya. She moves, you shoot her.
Understood.
Working quickly, Tucker crossed to their gear and prepared for the storm to come. He grabbed two spare magazines for his rifle, along with a red flare, stuffing them all into his thigh pockets. He then slung the AR-15 over his shoulder and picked up the Rover's plastic gas can. Once ready, he headed for the tunnels with Kane on his heels. It was time to test these old Boer defenses. 11:55 p.m. Reaching the cathedral, Tucker hurried across the stalagmite maze to the series of sandbag walls at the far end. He hurtled over the first two with Kane flying at his side. Then he skidded to a stop at the third wall and dropped to his knees. Echoing up from the crooked tunnel ahead, he heard a faint barking. No, not barking. Baying. The enemy had come with hounds. Farzin must have sent his main body of troops, along with the dogs, straight to where he had hid the booby-trapped Range Rover. The other Russians, the ones he had spied upon earlier, were likely a smaller expeditionary force sent here to canvass the side trail as a precaution. No wonder they had seemed so lax and casual. But now that Tucker's trap had been sprung and his ruse discovered, Kharzin had returned here, bringing all his forces to bear. But what was Tucker facing? Only one way to find out. He pointed to the tunnel. Quiet scout. Kane jumped over the sandbags and dove into the shaft. Using his phone, Tucker monitored his partner's progress. Once Kane reached the straight corridor, Tucker touched his throat mic. Hold. Belly. Kane stopped and lowered himself flat, well hidden by rubble. Right now, the corridor appeared empty, with no evidence of trespass. The pile of rocks blocking the way outside looked untouched. So far, the hounds hadn't found this back door to the cavern system, at least not for the moment. But they would. Through Kane's radio, the baying already grew louder. Hurrying, Tucker began removing sandbags from the middle of the barricade. After creating a sufficient-sized hole, he wedged the gas can into the gap. He then replaced the sandbags, taking care to hide any trace of the can. All the while, Tucker monitored the phone's screen, using Kane to extend his vision. Movement drew his full attention back to the screen. In the gray-green glow of Kane's night vision camera, the slivers of light at the far end of the corridor began to break wider. More light blazed through as rocks were pulled away. Shadows shifted out there. They'd been discovered. Tucker whispered to Kane,
quiet return.
The camera jiggled as the shepherd belly-crawled backward. After retreating for a spell, Cain finally turned and came running back. Moments later, he emerged and hurdled the sandbags.
Good boy.
After rechecking the placement of the gas can, Tucker pulled out a flare and jammed it between a pair of sandbags near the bottom. For now, he kept it unlit. He turned to his partner.
Stay.
With a final rub along Cain's neck, he stepped over the sandbags, planted his rifle to his shoulder, and ducked into the shaft. He crawled until he was at the last corner of the crooked corridor. He kept hidden out of sight, peeking around the bend with his rifle extended. He quickly doused his headlamp and flipped the scope to night vision mode. With his eye to the scope, he waited. The first Spetsnaz appeared, peeking out from the straight passageway, bathed in the moonlight flowing from the open door behind him. Tucker laid the crosshairs between the man's eyes and squeezed the trigger. The blast stung his ears. He didn't need to see the man crumple to know he was successful. Tucker ducked away and retreated as the bullets peppered down the shaft, likely fired blindly by the second soldier in line.
He knew the enemy dared not lob or fire a grenade into such a confined space, where it risked collapsing the very tunnel they had come to find and ruin any chances of reaching the prize. As far as they knew, this was the only way inside.
Still, he never trusted the enemy to think logically, especially with one of their comrades dead. So he fled on his hands and knees. If nothing else, the ambush would give the others pause, force them to move slowly, but it wouldn't last long. He reached the end of the tunnel, regained his feet, and hopped over the first sandbag wall. Crouching down, he ruffled Cain's neck and did a quick inspection of the gas can and flare. Satisfied, he headed back over the series of sandbag fences. As he hopped over the last one, a booming cry echoed from the far side of the cathedral. It was Christopher, calling from the mouth of the shotgun tunnels across the way.
Tucker, watch out!
Chapter 40. March 22nd, 12:18 a.m. Groot Karas Mountains, Namibia. Cain let out a deep snarl, leaped to his feet, and took off across the cathedral floor, heading in Christopher's direction. For the shepherd to break his last command to stay could only mean one thing, an immediate and real danger. Tucker stared down the length of the dark cathedral. At the other end, a star glowed, marking Christopher's headlamp. Between here and there lay a gulf of darkness. Cain vanished into it. Tucker lifted his rifle's scope and used its night vision capabilities to pierce the blackness. Out there, he watched a figure dashing between the stalagmites. Cain rushed at full sprint toward the shape. The jittering flight of the other was difficult to track through the forest of tall rock. Then the shape cleared a stalagmite, her face perfectly caught by the scope for the briefest instant, then gone as she dodged away, doing her best to stay in cover, knowing he was armed. Anya. Free. How? He caught another brief glimpse, watched her lift an arm, the flash of gunmetal in her hand, a revolver, the Smith & Wesson he had given to Bukalov, then gone again. New movement to the left. Cain. Then he vanished too. Next came the gunfire. Three shots in the dark. Each muzzle flash an incendiary burst through his scope, followed by a strangled yelp that tore his heart out. He watched a small shape skid across the floor, back into the glow of his headlamp, and come to a stop. Cain. Anya lunged out of the darkness, vaulted over the body, and came running straight at him, firing. Her first shot went wide. He shot back. Rock blasted behind her, his aim thrown off by the sight of Cain on the ground. Undeterred, she fired again. He felt a hammer blow on his hip that sent him spinning,
pitching backward over the sandbags. He lost the rifle. He rolled, tried to rise to his knees, and reached for the weapon.
Stop!
Anya shouted. She was standing at the sandbag wall. The revolver was pointed at Tucker's head, only 3 feet away. He ignored her and lunged for his rifle. She pulled the trigger. He heard the click. Nothing else. He had counted out her 5 shots. The limit of that Smith & Wesson model he had given Bukalov. Not the usual 6-shooter, Anya. He grabbed the rifle, swinging it up, but too slowly, thinking he had the upper hand. He turned in time to see the revolver flying at his face, catching him across the bridge of the nose, momentarily blinding him with a flash of pain. She threw herself over the sandbags and bowled into him. They went down, her on top. Tucker saw a glint of a black blade, one of the old boar bayonets he had spotted when he first descended into the cave. She drove it in a side swipe for his throat. Both as defense and offense, he head-butted her, his forehead striking her nose. The plunging bayonet struck the stone behind his head instead of his throat. He rolled her, straddling her. He clamped her wrist and twisted until she screamed. The bayonet dropped. He snatched it and held the point to her throat. She stared up, showing no fear. Not of death. Certainly not of him. From their long journey together, she knew he couldn't kill in cold blood, no matter how much he wanted to. A flick of her gaze was the only warning. A shadow hurtled the sandbags behind him. The heavy weight struck his back, catching him by surprise and slamming him down atop Anya. The shape tumbled off his shoulders and gained his 4 legs, wobbly, panting, dazed. Kane's lips curled in fury, his eyes fixed to his target. Even barely moving, his partner had come to his rescue, never giving up. Tucker stared down at Anya. Blood bubbled up around the bayonet plunged through her throat. When Kane had struck, with the sharp point poised under her chin, their combined weight had driven the blade home. Her mouth opened and closed, her eyes stared in disbelief and pain.
Tucker!
Christopher shouted again, sounding like he was running toward him.
I'm okay. Go back with Bukalov.
Tucker climbed off Anya, watching the pool of blood spread. She no longer breathed. Her eyes stared glassily upward. Dead. 12:36 a.m. He knelt and called Kane over to his side. The shepherd limped over with a soft whine and pressed himself against Tucker's chest. He ran his hands along Kane's belly but felt no blood. As he worked his fingers over the vest, the dog let out a wincing yelp.
You're okay, buddy.
As gently as he could, he pried the flattened .38 caliber round from the Kevlar and tossed it away. He followed it with a hug. Tucker then took inventory of his own damage. Anya had clipped him with her last shot, tearing the flesh of his upper thigh. Blood soaked his pant leg, and the pain was coming on, but it was manageable for now. A few inches to the center, and the high-powered .44 round would have shattered his hip, crippling him. Such was the changeable nature of war, where life, death, disfigurement were measured by inches and seconds. He considered his own past. How many friends had he lost to the capriciousness of fate? Take a half step to your left, and you get cut in half by an AK-47. A tossed grenade bounces to the right, and you live another day. But if it bounces to the left, your legs are blown off. He felt an icy shudder run up his spine. His eyesight swirled. In some detached part of his mind, he thought, classic symptoms of PTSD. He clung to that notion. You know this enemy. Tucker took a half dozen calming breaths. You're alive. Kane's alive. Get it together and do what you came here for. Abruptly, Kane's ears perked up, accompanied by a low growl meant only for his ears.
rustling rose from the tunnel. He motioned for Kane to stay. Clicking off his headlamp, he grabbed his rifle, rose to his knees, and found a break in the sandbags to peer through. Using his night vision scope, he spied a Spetsnaz soldier edging toward the mouth of the tunnel, cautious, likely hearing the gunplay from a moment ago. Tucker waited until he reached the tunnel's end and shot him in the head. He followed it with a continuous barrage of fire into the tunnel to keep the others at bay. While doing this, he crossed forward, high-stepping the sandbags, knowing what he needed from the dead soldier. He reached the corpse, clicking on his headlamp, and pulled the dead man's torso to the side. Enemy fire blasted out of the tunnel, but he kept away from the direct line of sight. He quickly stripped off the man's portable radio. That's all he intended to grab, but he got greedy and yanked a couple of grenades off the man's tactical harness. He shoved the pilfered pair into his pocket. Then he grabbed a third, pulled the pin, and threw it down the tunnel. And ran. He vaulted over the first wall of sandbags, stopping only long enough to yank the hidden flare's ignition loop, setting it sputtering to life. As he rolled over the second barrier, he dropped flat. The grenade exploded, the flash bright in the darkness, the noise deafening. Tucker gained his knees, stared back as smoke poured out, along with a sift of fine sand. The tunnel hadn't collapsed, but it would certainly discourage any more soldiers from coming through for a time. Gathering came to his side, he fled across the cathedral, his wounded leg on fire. By the time he reached the twin tunnels, his sock on that side was damp with blood. Exhausted, he reached the twin tunnels and sank to his rear with Kane. Calling over his shoulder down the tunnel, he shouted, "Christopher!" The young man appeared a moment later and knelt beside Tucker.
"You are hurt."
"And Anya is dead. I'll take that deal. By the way, how did she get loose?"
"When Bukolov returned, I had to help him out of the hole. She came at us then, caught us by surprise. She knocked me down and attacked Bukolov with an old bayonet she must have picked up. She tried to cut away the doctor's specimen collection kit and steal it, but he fought and the bag ripped open, scattering bulbs and sample dishes across the floor. She did succeed in grabbing Bukolov's gun. By the time I got my rifle and fired at her, she was already running and gone."
"But how did she get loose to begin with?"
"Among her ropes, I found the ripped remains of her cast."
Tucker nodded slowly. During his fight with her, he hadn't noticed her cast was missing. While tying her up, he had bound her good wrist to her cast. He should have known better, but he never imagined her to be that tough and stoic. It had to be extremely painful to get the cast off, yet she showed not the slightest wince or bead of sweat. With her back against the stalagmite and her hands hidden behind her, she must have slowly, using the fingers of her other hand and the rock's hard surface, broken through the plaster and worked the cast free. Afterward, she was able to tug her hands through the loose rope. From there, it was just a matter of waiting for the right moment to act.
"I'm sorry," Christopher said.
"Nothing to be sorry about. She was scary good, but I need a few things. Two of the 5-second chemical detonators and the first aid kit." As Christopher disappeared into the tunnel, Tucker put on the stolen headset and keyed the radio. "General Harzin, come in. Are you there?" There were a few seconds of silence, then a harsh voice answered.
"This is Harzin. I assume I am talking to Tucker Wayne?"
"That's right. I want to negotiate. We can all leave here with what we want."
"Which is what?"
"Against my advice, Bukolov wants to make a deal. A trade. Some of the Luka samples for our lives."
"He has it then?"
Harzin asked.
"He's found the source?"
"Almost," he lied. "He's in the tunnel digging as we speak. He sounds confident of success."
"Give me a few minutes to consider your offer."
That was a lie, too. Tucker needed to teach the Russian a lesson before they could really talk. Christopher reappeared, carrying the items Tucker had requested.
Thanks. Follow me.
He regained his feet and hobbled up the tiered steps to the right and dropped into the old Boer foxhole. He moved 50 yards along it. Christopher followed, carrying the supplies. Once settled, Tucker pointed across the cathedral to the small red glow.
Do you see the burning flare over there?
Barely, but yes.
Put your rifle scope on the shaft entrance beyond it and tell me if you see anything. With Christopher guarding, Tucker slit open his pant leg around the wound, then ripped open a quick clot package from the first aid kit and pressed it to the bullet gouge. He clenched his teeth against the burn and wrapped a pressure bandage around his thigh and knotted it in place. He then took out the remaining half block of C4 from his pocket. He divided what was left into two equal pieces. He returned one to his pocket, then shaped the other into a deadly pancake and carefully inserted a chemical detonator in its center. He passed the bomb over to Christopher.
This half we'll use to blow the artillery shells.
Hold on, Christopher whispered. I see movement. Two men, I think.
Good. I'll take cover. Take the C4 back to the cavern and wait for me.
As he left, Tucker lifted his rifle and peered through the scope. A pair of Spetsnaz soldiers crouched at the entrance of the blasted shaft. They were in full body armor, weapons ready. Beyond them, another soldier crept out. And another. The last one carried an RPG launcher. An arm waved, preparing for a sweep of the cavern. As if on cue, Kharzin's voice came over Tucker's headset.
Mr. Wayne, I have given your proposal some thought.
And?
What assurances do I have that you will keep your word?
Good question.
Tucker adjusted his aim on the flaming flare, then lifted the crosshairs to where he had hidden the rover's gas can.
This is my answer.
He squeezed the trigger. As the round struck the can, gasoline jetted from the bullet's holes, ran down to the flaming flare, and ignited. With a whoosh, flames engulfed the back of the cathedral. The soldiers began screaming. Orange backlit shadows danced on the walls. After a few seconds, the screaming stopped.
Tucker spoke into his headset. You heard?
Yes, I heard.
Kharzin had to learn this lesson. It was the Russian way. From his prior employment with Bogdan Fedosiev, Tucker knew how the general would respond to the inherent weakness expressed by Tucker's offer. As expected, he would try to gain the upper hand by force, to test how weak his opponent actually was. Now he knew.
General, I've had 12 hours to turn this place into a death trap for you and your men. If you want to keep sending your boys in, I'll be happy to keep killing them. But I don't think you came with a limitless supply.
You set me up.
Tucker heard a note of respect buried in the outrage.
Do we have a deal?
Kharzin hesitated, then sighed.
We have a deal. What are your terms?
Let me check Dr. Bukalov's progress. I'll get back to you in 10 minutes. Cross me again, General, and things will really start to get ugly. Do you understand?
I do.
One last thing. Is Felice Nilsson with you?
And if she is?
She's part of the bargain. I want her.
Why?
Take a guess.
Well, as it happens, she's not with us. She had another assignment. And speaking of personnel, I want Anya returned untouched.
Tucker heard more than mere professional concern for a colleague in the Russian's voice. This was a personal matter for the general. He knew better than to tell the truth.
That can be arranged, he said.
Then we have a deal.
Stay by your radio, General.
Tucker signed off and hopped back down, one painful step at a time. Though the back of the cathedral still burned, he dared not leave his rear unguarded. He pressed his forehead to Kane's. "Sorry, buddy, but I need to ask even more from you." Kane wagged his tail. He pointed to the flames. "Hold. Watch." The shepherd dropped to his belly and stared across the cavern, ready to watch for any further intrusions. Ever his guardian.
12:55 a.m.
As Tucker limped back into the cave, Bukalov and Christopher joined him, both clearly wanting to know what the plan was from here.
"Have you secured your samples, Doc?"
"Yes, they're packed away. What now?"
"I told Harzin we're willing to make a deal. We'd trade half of the Luka samples for our lives."
Bukalov opened his mouth to protest, but Tucker held up a hand. "I'm stalling for time. There are only two ways out of here. One, we can't climb out since I pulled that rope. The other is crawling with Spetsnaz. So, we're going to have to make a third."
"How?"
Christopher asked.
"Do you remember the first spot we dug, on the ravine wall outside?"
Both men nodded. Tucker pointed across the cavern.
"It's right on the other side of that wall. I estimate it's only 3 or 4 feet thick, mostly soft sandstone."
Bukalov looked there in dismay.
"It would take us hours to dig."
Tucker pulled the square of C4 from his pocket.
"But only seconds to blast through."
"Would that work?"
Christopher said.
"Truly?"
"It's our only shot."
So they all set to work. Tucker unfolded and handed Christopher one of the shovels and instructed him to dig a hole 4 feet off the ground, as deep as he could make it. As they labored, Tucker prepared the new charge and handed the C4 paddy to Bukalov.
"Gently, Doctor. It's live. Just go stand by Christopher."
He then collected the first bomb he'd prepared earlier and planted it down the hole among the artillery shells. With everything in motion, Tucker limped back over to the cathedral and joined Kane. He put on his headset and keyed the radio.
"General, are you there?"
After a few long seconds, he responded.
"I am here."
"Bukalov has the samples."
"Good news."
"How many vehicles do you have?"
"2.
"We're going to want one of them."
"I understand, considering the fate of your original vehicle."
He heard the residual anger in the man's voice. So at least his ruse with the rover had worked. Tucker asked,
"Are both vehicles at the entrance to the cave?"
He pictured the SUV from earlier, parked in the canyon by the back door.
As far as the Russian knew, that was the only entrance.
"Yes."
"Okay, we have wounded in here. Give me a few more minutes to get ourselves together, then I'll signal you to come in. You may bring two of your men as guards, so we're all on equal footing. I don't want any surprises. We'll make the trade in here, then you and all your men will get in one vehicle and drive off. Agreed?"
"Agreed. And you'll have Anya ready to travel."
"Yes. Stand by."
Tucker left Kane on guard and returned to the cavern. Bukalov was leaning against the wall, cradling the C4 paddy in his hands.
"I am not enjoying this, Tucker."
"Hang in there. Christopher, how's it coming?"
Christopher stopped digging.
"See for yourself. To be honest, I don't think we need that explosive. The sandstone is crumbling almost faster than I can chop at it."
Tucker examined the hole. It was already more than 2 feet deep.
"You're right. Over time, the moisture from this chamber must have weakened the stone, softening it. Keep going, but gently. I don't want to punch through quite yet. Doc, are you packed and ready to go?"
"I'm ready. But what am I going to do with this?"
He raised the C4 in his palms.
"It's okay to lay the C4 paddy down at your feet. Just don't step on it."
"I will step gingerly from here."
"Tucker, I am almost through,"
Christopher called. Tucker returned to his side and used a chisel to punch a hole through the wall. He pressed his ear to the opening and listened for half a minute. Satisfied no one was in this canyon, he widened the hole and peered out. Kharzin had all his men in the other gorge, guarding what he believed was the only entrance.
Okay, everyone keep your voices low from here. We don't want to turn any heads in this direction.
He turned to Christopher.
Go ahead and widen the hole as quietly as you can, just large enough for both of you to climb through. Then I want you to take the packs and Kane and hightail it away from here. Stay hidden and keep moving east. Kane can help you. I'll catch up and find you once I'm finished here.
What are you going to do?
Bukalov said.
I'm going to keep Kharzin looking at me while you all make your escape. After that, I'm going to drop your C4 paddy down with the one I already planted among those artillery shells and run like hell. When those babies blow, this whole cavern will collapse in on itself.
Christopher whispered,
I'm finished.
Then it's time for you all to vacate the premises. Tucker helped gather their packs and drop them through the opening and out into the chilly night. He also gathered up Bukalov's abandoned bomb and repositioned it close to the hole in the floor. With everything ready, he used the video feed on his phone to check on Kane, staring at the screen. All looked quiet out in the cathedral, so he touched his mic and summoned his partner back to his side. He gave Kane a warm greeting, then passed his phone to Christopher.
No matter what happens to me, keep hiking to last night's campsite and wait for your brothers. Once you're safely back over the border, hit #1 on the speed dial and ask for Harper. Tell her what's happened, and she'll take it from there.
I will.
And take care of Kane.
Taka.
Promise me.
I promise. He'll be like another brother to me.
I couldn't ask for anything better.
Christopher extended his hand, shook Tucker's, then clambered through the hole and dropped low outside.
Now you, Doctor, Tucker said.
Without warning, Bukalov wrapped Tucker in a bear hug.
I will see you out there, yes? As soon as possible.
As Bukalov climbed out, Tucker knelt beside Kane.
You've done enough here, buddy, he said, his voice cracking. I'm going to do this last part by myself.
Kane cocked his head and stared into Tucker's eyes. A soft whine flowed to him. He plainly sensed what was to come. Tucker stood again and whispered,
Christopher, are you there?
I'm here.
He lifted Kane in his arms, gave him a final long squeeze, then guided him through the hole and into Christopher's waiting hands.
I have him, Tucker. Good luck.
You too.
He waited for 3 minutes, making sure no shouts of alarm were raised as the others fled. He took an extra moment to cover the hole with a scrap of khaki tent canvas, securing the upper corners with duct tape. He didn't want the moonlight shining through the new window, giving away the ruse when he entertained guests in a few minutes. He then crossed back to the cathedral and tugged back on the radio headset. He kept his headlamp off, standing in the pitch darkness.
General Kharzin?
Yes, I am here.
You can come in.
We are on our way.
1:58 a.m. Keeping watch, Tucker raised his rifle and peered through the night vision scope. After 2 minutes, the greenish haze of lights bloomed on the far side. Moments later, 3 men appeared. From their body posture, he could register the horror of finding the charred remains of their comrades. The trio stepped over the sandbags, only to discover Anya's body. They knelt there even longer, clearly calling for someone to collect her. Then they started across the cathedral floor. When they reached the halfway point, Tucker shouted,
"Stop there!"
The men halted. Into his headset, Tucker said,
General, your...
The pain in the other's voice cut him off.
You told me Anya was still alive.
Let's call it even.
It'll never be even. Never.
She was my daughter.
Shocked by this revelation, Tucker felt a sickening twist in his gut. He remembered Anya talking about her father. He could still hear the buried pain in her words.
My father was in the Russian army. He was a hard man.
Tucker now wondered how much of that pain was feigned. He could only imagine what it was like to grow up with a father like Harzin, to be used and groomed to be little more than a finely honed tool. He remembered that it had been Anya who had first suggested to Bukalov that she pretend to be the doctor's daughter. Perhaps that ruse had its roots here. To keep things easy, Anya simply shifted the lie about one father to another.
I'm going to kill you, Harzin said.
I'm sorry for your loss, General. I truly am. And you certainly can come after me, but for now, do you want revenge or your Luca samples?
Harzin didn't respond for a full 10 seconds. His voice was tight with grief and fury.
We will settle this personal matter later then, but I promise you, it will be settled. There will be an accounting.
I look forward to it, Tucker said. For now, come forward. Let's be done with this. Harzin and his two companions started walking, proceeding slowly, suspiciously. When they were 30 feet away, Tucker saw movement across the cathedral. Halt! He yelled. What is going on back there?
One of the men glanced over to the commotion.
They are only collecting the bodies of my men and my daughter. I will not leave them behind.
Then keep coming, he said, and added a lie. But be warned, I have other guns fixed on them if they try anything. He took off his headset and began backing down the tunnel. Keep coming, General, he called out.
Tucker continued his retreat back to the waterfall cavern and didn't stop until he was a few steps from the hole. Harzin and his men entered the cave cautiously, searching thoroughly. The tallest man waved the other two to stand guard and continued forward alone. This had to be General Harzin. He was a bull of a man, stony-faced, much like his photos, but in person, he appeared younger than Tucker had expected. Tucker raised the rifle level to the man's chest.
Nice to finally meet you, General.
Harzin would not look at him, keeping his face averted, hard, and angry. He simply thrust out his palm, even refusing to speak to the man who had killed his daughter, perhaps not trusting himself to.
Again, I am sorry for your loss, Tucker said.
The arm remained up, demanding.
Show me the Luca.
Immediately, alarm bells went off in Tucker's head as the man spoke. The voice was wrong. He stared harder at the man's shadowy features.
Though there was a resemblance to the photos he'd seen of Harzin back in Istanbul, the man standing before him wasn't the general. Get on your knees, Tucker shouted, shouldering his rifle. Now!
All three men knelt down. Tucker put his headset back on.
General, this was a bad gamble.
Did you really think I would risk handing myself over to you? And now, none of this matters. Even in death, my beautiful girl did her job. She brought me what I wanted. I knew she would never fail me.
What are you talking about?
You should have searched Anya after you killed her.
Tucker's belly turned to ice.
Harzin said, I'm kneeling beside my beautiful daughter right now. It appears Dr. Bukalov is missing one of his samples. Major Lipov, are you there?
I am here, General, the man said, speaking into his headset.
Kill him.
Lipov's arm shot behind his back. Tucker shifted his rifle and fired, striking the man in the heart. The two men on the slope yanked their guns up, but he was already moving as soon as he squeezed the trigger. The others opened fire, but he leaped sideways and slammed his heel down on the C4 paddy planted there, igniting its chemical fuse. 5 seconds. With rounds ricocheting off the rock at his heels, he kicked the primed explosive down the neighboring hole and kept going. 4. Firing from the hip, he sprinted across the cavern for the canvas-covered hole. 3. He didn't slow and dove head first at the covering. 2. Ripping through the canvas, he sailed out the hole, landed hard on his palms, and rolled. 1. He pushed himself to his knees, then his feet, and started running down the canyon. Behind him, he heard a whoomp, followed by a second, sharper boom. He kept sprinting as a string of firecrackers, the cache of artillery shells, began detonating. Head down, legs pumping, he kept going. Don't look back, run! The pressure wave hit him and sent him flying. 2:39 a.m. Tucker landed in a heap, blinked hard, and spat out a mouthful of dirt, swearing under his breath. He had survived, gotten the others out safely, but still failed. Harzin had a sample of Luca. The rumble of engines echoed from the other canyon. The Russians were preparing to leave. Tucker looked around. Behind him, the cliff face that he just jumped through showed little sign of damage, save for the gout of smoke and dust gushing through his exit hole. But he knew inside that tiny microcosm of the primordial world was gone, incinerated. But it was too little too late. He pictured Harzin in one of those SUVs, clutching a buttery white bulb. Was there still time to catch him? And more important, catch him by surprise. Tucker would never make it out and around to the other canyon. And even if he did, he'd likely just be run over. Instead, he turned and headed back the way he had come, checking his pockets as he ran. He'd lost his rifle, so he would have to improvise. He sprinted, passing through the surge of smoke, and skidded to a stop beside the boulder steps that led up to the plateau. He scrambled like a monkey with his tail on fire. When he reached the top, he paused for a breath, picturing what lay below. He was now standing atop the cavern inside. If the blast there had weakened the structure, he might drop straight through.
Might, maybe, if... The hell with it.
He charged across the plateau toward the opposite canyon. As he neared the edge of the cliff, the rumble of the trucks ratcheted to twin roars. Tucker slid to a stop and looked down to see both of Harzin's SUVs racing along the canyon floor, their headlights bouncing over the rock walls. Tucker started running parallel to them, balanced on the cliff's edge, one eye on his footing, one eye on the SUVs. Somewhere directly ahead of him was the end of the cliff, the section shaped like a pig's snout. He ignored the voice in his head yelling for him to stop. Instead, he ran faster and yanked out the two grenades he had stolen from the soldier he had shot. As he reached the cliff's edge, he dropped to his butt and began sliding down the steep slope of the snout. To his right, out of the corner of his eye, the first SUV raced past him. Skidding along, he pulled the pin with his teeth, but he kept the spoon pressed tightly. Then he reached the blunted end of the snout and went airborne. The drop was only 10 feet, but he was flying. He hit the ground hard and shoulder rolled, hugging his limbs tightly, clutching the grenades to his belly. As his momentum bled away, he skidded to a stop and rose to his knees. He let the grenade spoon pop and hurled it after the lead SUV as it swept past him. Behind him, an engine roared. Headlights flashed over him. He spun to find the second SUV barreling straight at him. He dove right and rolled out of its way, barely making it. Flipping to his back, he pulled the pin on the second grenade and lifted his arm to throw. Whomp! The first grenade exploded, fouling his aim as he let loose with the second. The black chunk of armament bounced harmlessly past the second SUV's back bumper and rolled into the scrub. Escaping damage, the truck sped away, dropping down the ravine that led up here, and was gone.
Whomp!
Bushes blasted away amid a choke of rock dust. All that wasted fury. Cursing, Tucker turned to the first SUV. Its right side was on fire, flames licking inside. From the cabin came screaming. He ran toward the SUV, not knowing if Harzin was in this vehicle or the one that got away. There was only one way to know for sure. He ran to the far side of the burning SUV, where the flames were less intense, and yanked open the passenger door. Heat washed over him, accompanied by a few licks of fire that he dodged. The driver lay slumped at the wheel, his back burning, his skin blackening and oozing. But his uniform marked him as a major, not a general. Same was true of the passenger. The second man had caught shrapnel in the chest and the side of his face. The man groaned and grabbed Tucker's wrist. His head turned, revealing a flayed cheek and an eye scorched black. His mouth opened, but only guttural sounds came out. Tucker twisted his wrist, trying to free it from the man's vice-like grip.
"Niet,"
the man rasped finally.
"Niet."
His other hand rose, clutching a grenade. He threw it over his shoulder into the back seat and held fast to Tucker, trapping him with a strength born of vengeance and pain. Not hesitating, Tucker swung his fist and smashed it into the guy's face. As the man's head snapped back, he finally broke free and ran. He'd only taken a handful of steps when a sledgehammer struck him across the back. Everything immediately went dark.